VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today. Ladies and gentlemen, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, the U.S. population of those aged 65 and over grew nearly five times faster than the total population over the 100 years from 1920 to 2020. In the year 1920, a person aged 65 and over, it was about 1 in 20 of our population. However, in the year 2020, that number has changed to about 1 in 6 people. The older population increased from 4.9 million in 1920 to 55.8 million in 2020. Folks, that represents a growth rate of 1,000%, almost five times that of the total population. Now, many have wondered how this will be sustained in such things like Social Security benefits. But the larger picture is how this is going to impact health care for older Americans. You may not be, you may or may not be aware of that on June 8th, 2023, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services announced a new, quote, voluntary primary care model called Making Care Primary. It's a model that's being tested in 8 states. Well, our guest indicates that this plan will ration health care to seniors. And folks, don't buy into that word voluntary, because soon it is going to be mandatory. Well, we have this and many other issues to discuss today. It's our privilege to have back Twyla Braes, the president and co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom. Twyla is a registered nurse, a certified public health nurse, author of the 8-time award-winning book, Big Brother in the Exam Room, The Dangerous Truth About Electronic Health Records. She's a speaker on the Daily Health Freedom Minute, heard on stations across the country. Additionally, her efforts led to a national law requiring parental consent for research using newborn DNA, a national campaign exposing HIPAA as a data sharing rule, an online nationwide directory of drug pay practices, the Wedge of Health Freedom, and the Patient Toolbox, designed to help patients understand their options in coercive situations and maintain control over their treatment decisions. Twyla, good to have you back with us on Crosstalk.
It's always great to be here, Jim. Thank you.
So, Twyla, I'm guessing most people have not heard about this Making Care Primary model that's just been introduced. Tell us about it.
Yes, well, I think your description introducing it was very good. But the idea for Americans to understand further is the fact that there are two types of Medicare options. And when people are about to turn 65, they're offered either traditional Medicare, or sometimes called original Medicare, or they're offered Medicare Advantage, which means that they go into a health plan version of Medicare. Traditional Medicare, on the other hand, gives you freedom to go anywhere you want in the country, to see any doctor you want in the country, go to any hospital in the country. You do not have a network. So because Medicare is slated for insolvency in 2031, less than 10 years from now, I believe the Medicare administration is trying every way possible to get doctors to conform to the way Medicare wants them to treat seniors, and to get patients to go into a managed care arrangement, whether or not they are in the health plan or HMO version of Medicare, or whether they are in the traditional or original version of Medicare. And so what this really means is that the federal government is going to pay doctors who volunteer for this 10-year program, will essentially pay them more to be accountable to the government for how they spend the money. And that means that the government does not want them to spend the money on any kind of care that the government does not label as valuable. Now, it may be highly valuable for the senior. It may be medically necessary for the senior. But perhaps the government agency doesn't want it to be provided because it's too expensive, or the senior citizen is too old, or whatever kind of reason that they would come up with. But at the end of the day, the plan here is to try to get the doctors, to coerce the doctors to follow government mandates for treatment, even though citizens, seniors, may be in the more freedom-based version of Medicare. If their doctors decide to get further under the thumb of the government, then it won't be as free as it is today.
So, again, Twyla, I mean, what you have said there is just staggering. You indicate that doctors that participate in this, they're going to get more money for providing what's called value-based care?
Yes. Well, in the way that it works with Medicare and Medicare Advantage and the ACOs and these accountable care organizations in the country, is that they get something back. And what the government says is initially this is going to be all carrots. No, let's see, what is it? Carrots versus what? Carrots versus sticks, right? It's going to be an all carrots approach, not sticks. But of course, the whole idea here is eventually getting to sticks,
right,
where the doctors would have to pay penalties back to the government if they do not, if they spend too much money during the year.
So this really incentivizes doctors then, when it changes from carrots to sticks, not to make healthcare decisions really in the best interest of their patient. It's in the best interest of, you know, who's calling the shots.
That's correct. It's really about putting a conflict of interest between the patient and the doctor. And back in 1965, when Medicare was created, one of the things in the Medicare law is it says that nothing in this title, this law, is authorized to allow any federal officer or employee to exercise any supervision or control over the practice of medicine. But that has long not been followed, particularly in moving people into the Medicare Advantage, where they have less freedom and the health plans have the authority to deny access to care. And maybe just one other fact for your listeners is that the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, their Office of Inspector General, has found in three different years that Medicare Advantage really has a pattern of denying access to care, of just putting out denials for whatever the doctor has prescribed in a significant amount of situations. And then, however, if the patient appeals, those health plans, about 75% of the time, they will overturn their own decision and provide that care. But unfortunately, because, of course, patients are sick, they're dying, they're busy, whatever, only 1% of these denials are ever appealed, which the Office of Inspector General says this means that seniors are losing access to medically necessary care. Mm-hmm. So there's a pattern here of the health plans, the Medicare Advantage plans, they just automatically deny. And then if you take the time to go against them, then you're probably going to get the care that you want. But how many of you have the time, right, the energy, or the wherewithal, you know, to do the whole appeals process?
So you're saying about 99% of the people just accept that token answer they get at the beginning. It's denied, so therefore they don't go ahead with it.
That's correct.
Well, I understand that also that there is an element of this that uses Medicare dollars for social needs. What do they mean by social needs?
Oh, there's something new that's sweeping the country called social determinants of health. This is really a Marxist construct, and it means that the government will look at everything in your life as being related to how healthy you are or your health outcomes. Everything from education to transportation to housing to do you have friends to everything, right? And so they want to use some of this money in Medicare to meet social needs, and which would come out of the collection of data about every aspect of your life. And what really this means is that money that you think you give in premiums or is available to you, because that's what Medicare is, it's about taking care of you when you're ill or injured, it's going to be diverted to things like getting people transportation or a better education or more parks in their neighborhood or anything that could relate to them being a healthier person. And that means that there's less money for care,
right,
in the end.
Right. Wow. I think it's also interesting to note a statement that's coming out from the CMS Deputy Administrator and the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation Director, Liz Fowler, saying the Making Care Primary Model represents an unprecedented investment in our nation's primary care network and brings us closer to our goal of reaching 100%. Hear that, folks? 100% of traditional Medicare beneficiaries and the vast majority of Medicaid beneficiaries in accountable care arrangements, including advanced primary care, by 2030. This is really the game plan for everybody 65 and older.
That's correct. 100%. They want all of them in these so-called accountable care arrangements where the doctor becomes accountable to the government for how much care he gives and how much money she spent.
You know, the year 2030 also caught my attention because we've done so many programs on Agenda 2030 by the United Nations, the so-called Great Reset. Is there a tie to all of this?
That I do not know, but I think, you know, the 2031 insolvency of Medicare, which is what the trustees have predicted recently, might be more of that than that reset.
Mm-hmm. So how is this being promoted, this Making Care Primary model? How is it being, I understand it's being tested in several states?
It's going to be, and it's not going to start until 2024, but they are going to ask doctors to start signing up late this summer, according to their press release.
Mm-hmm.
So the first promotion, of course, was just, you know, the press release came out. But I'm sure that the physicians who are in these rural areas and in these small communities in particular, that's where they're really focused on, or that's who they're targeting. They're probably going to get announcements. They're going to talk about the benefits and perhaps, you know, the extra money that they'll get for joining this. I don't know what the dollars are, right? But I did read that it's essentially going to be a more carrots in the beginning.
Yeah. Did Congress authorize this?
This is part of the CMMI, let's see, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, which has been authorized by Congress to do these kind of pilot projects. And as you can tell, it's voluntary. So they're not telling doctors you have to, but oftentimes that's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
It starts voluntary. And then when there's a few doctors who say, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that for my patients, they'll make it mandatory.
And, folks, again, this is to start in 2024. What are those buzzwords they should be watching for, Twyla?
Well, I think accountable care, or they could be just there. I don't think they're actually going to hear about it. I don't think that patients are going to really be told about this. This is all sort of, you know, behind the scenes to take control of the doctors behind the scenes, and then patients, nothing's going to happen that patients can influence except if they want to ask their doctors, do not become part of Making Care Primary. Do not become part of that. I don't want you accountable to the government. I want you accountable to me.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to take a quick break. And friends, another comment on this before we move on to some other healthcare-related issues as well. Twyla Braze is with us from the Citizens Council for Health Freedom. Their website, cchfreedom.org. Stay with us. We'll be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk coming your way on the VCY American Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, whatever happened to Halley's Comet?
Chris, Halley's Comet is what astronomers refer to as a short-term comet. It makes an orbit around the sun every 76 years. People saw it in the early 1900s and then again in the 80s. Astronomers can keep track of it through telescopes, and they've noticed it has decreased in size. Every trip around the sun causes the comet to disintegrate, with the tail of the comet being stripped away. Halley's Comet can't make very many trips around the sun without being totally destroyed. Thus, it couldn't be millions and millions of years old. It's a short-period comet. But there are a lot of short-period comets in the solar system. The solar system can't be billions of years old with all these youthful features in it. Chris, everything fits the recent creation idea that we're taught when we go back to Genesis.
For more information, you can find us on the web at www.icr.org.
Friends, again, it's called the Making Care Primary Model, and doctors will be encouraged to sign up for this and to participate in this. But again, it's a program that incentivizes them on really cutting back their care because they're looking for the best interest of the state rather than the best interest of the patient. If all goes as planned for this model, have to cut back on the services that are offered to individuals. Twyla, I just want to get something to clarify. At the very beginning of our interview, you mentioned the three types of Medicare: traditional, original, or Medicare Advantage. Which one of these gives individuals the most freedom?
So actually, there are just two types.
Oh, two types.
It's often been called original Medicare, but in this particular model, they're talking about, this comment was about traditional Medicare, but it's the same thing, traditional or original Medicare. And the other one is Medicare Advantage. And so the most freedom comes from original Medicare, sometimes called traditional Medicare.
Okay, very good. And again, this is something that people can't, make a phone call to somebody, except to their own doctor, not to participate in this.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, as I mentioned, we've got other issues, too, pertaining to health care that I'd like to talk about. And one of these is the Biden administration's mission to really rise up against states that are protecting life in the womb, as well as those who are protecting youth from hormone blockers or sterilization or body mutilating surgery. There's no secret, Twyla, that Mr. Biden has got states offering such protection for youth in his crosshairs. Tell us what's taking place.
Yes, well, there is a rule that was a proposed rule to put that was put out regarding HIPAA, and it was regarding reproductive health care. And so what this rule says is that anyone doing reproductive health care, which could be abortion, it could be sterilization, it could be body mutilation for gender transition, anyone doing that, anyone having it done to them, anyone taking someone to get it done, like crossing state lines, for example, that no data at all can be given to anyone to do things like prosecute for any kind of criminal or local offense. It can't be used to investigations or proceedings of any sort. And really what this is doing is trying to create a special protected class for those getting and giving abortions and for any of the folks around the clinics and the hospitals that are doing the gender transition surgeries. It's violating state law. It's hiding the criminals. So just imagine that there's a pimp, for example, who discovers that one of the prostitutes, one of the young ladies, is pregnant and decides to and is in a state that prohibits abortion. So he takes her across the state line and gets an abortion in the border state, right? And this would say that nobody can find out what kind of data there is on this particular situation or any situation like this under this rule. And why is this? Because this is a HIPAA rule, right? And everybody thinks HIPAA protects privacy. But the Biden administration knows, the doctors know, the clinics know, everybody knows that under HIPAA there is no privacy. And so this regulation is essentially a tacit acknowledgement that HIPAA does not protect privacy, because they're having to go into HIPAA and say, for these people, you can't have access to their data.
Wow.
But for anybody else, feel free. And don't ask their consent. You don't need their consent to share the information. But for these people, the ones who want the data have to actually sign in a written statement that they are not going to use it to prosecute anyone or to start an investigation.
It's amazing, Twyla. I mean, we keep hearing these buzzwords today like equality and equity, but as you said, this really carves out this special protected class. I mean, what's equitable about that?
Well, There's nothing equitable, but there's something very political.
Yes.
And that's what's going on here, is something very political.
Yeah. Twyla Braze is with us today from the Citizens Council for Health Freedom. Twyla, June 2023, U.S. Supreme Court gave their 6-3 decision to get rid of affirmative action as it relates to college admissions. But you believe this also impacts healthcare-related issues?
Well, I do, because, of course, there's medical school admissions. And one of the things that politicians and government agencies have been trying to do is to say that patients need someone who looks like them. Patients need someone from their own culture to take care of them. And this is how we will have health equity. And this is how we will not have health disparities. And so there has been a push at the medical school level, you know, to have a certain amount of quotas of different colors and different cultures. And, you know, one of the things that I like to say when I think about this is remember Dr. Ben Carson and how he would, you know, all the amazing work that he did with twins and that sort of thing, right? And nobody said, well, you're not my color. I need somebody who's my color, you know, to help me with my children. That's not what they said. They said, you're excellent. I want you.
Right.
And so I think there's a whole push in healthcare now to have health equity and to have no racial inequity and against health disparities. And they're tracking everybody's culture, everybody's race, everybody's color. They're tracking all of this. And it's bad. It's bad for healthcare. It's divisive. It's not true. And it's keeping really good doctors out of medical school. It's making good doctors think twice about doing what they need to do for a patient of one color because of what they did for a patient of another color. And they don't want to be charged with, you know, a civil rights violation for doing something different, even though the patients needed something different, even though they had the same diagnosis. And so this is a scary time for doctors as this whole agenda of health disparities and race equity is pushed in the medical field. And I think this will help to keep that from happening.
Let's hit another issue. We know under President Obama, our House and Senate passed Obamacare. It was named the Affordable Care Act. And Twyla, you know, we were promised health insurance premiums would go down, standard of care would get better. Many were alarmed, though, by Nancy Pelosi, then Speaker, who said we need to pass this so we can find out what's in it. And now many years later of affordable health care, just the opposite is taking place than what we're told. Our premiums are increasing off the charts. Benefits are decreasing. And Twyla, I know you could rightly say, I told you so, because you warned this would happen. But if you would comment on what we're seeing take place today under this Obamacare.
Yeah, so I will say that, of course, everybody knows that health insurance has become affordable, you know, wonderful for those who have found healthcare sharing ministries and seen how inexpensive that is when individuals are sharing each other's expenses and when everybody goes after a cash-based price, really decreases costs. But health insurance itself is very expensive, unaffordable, not patient-friendly. You've got high deductibles, you've got high premiums. Most people will never use their deductible. They'll end up paying very high prices instead of getting cash-based prices. But the other thing, very much like what's happening in Medicare and what I said about the Office of the Inspector General, is a report is out now that some health plans for just regular people, people who are not yet age 65, that there is a pattern of denial that's actually premeditated, so that some insurance companies deny up to 49% of submitted claims. Some have computer algorithms that just simply issue rapid-fire denials with absolutely no review of the chart. And one article talked about that an insurance company has a job title called denial nurse. So if you're applying for that position, you're applying to be the one who denies access to care. So I think what we have to understand is the health plan's purpose is profit. It's not protection of the patients. You know, it's not medical ethics. It's there as a business, and it's there to make as much money as it can for its shareholders and for itself. And to realize that is to realize the importance of going back to a cash-based system like we want to create with the wedge, and a brand new parallel system of cash at every level, including an insurance company that pays you cash. And then you get to decide what doctor to go to, what hospital to go to, and then you pay your own bills. And they know that there's no big insurance pocket at the end that they can, you know, charge you astronomical prices because you'll never be able to pay, and you will want the prices up front and might decide not to use them.
So I've got a couple of questions about what you've just said here. First of all, you mentioned the word algorithms that are at play regarding care. Who puts these algorithms together?
Oh, well, my guess is that the insurance companies have their own technicians who do this. They might borrow from entities that specialize in putting these kind of algorithms together. And as we move towards artificial intelligence, health plans, I know, are beginning to use these kind of initiatives to just tell doctors and nurses how to take care of patients. And that can have denial in there, or it can have only certain things that you can do.
Okay, and the other thing that you're talking about, the prompted question, you've been with us before, Twyla, telling us of physicians who are just not going along with these things, and you call it the wedge of health freedom. So tell us about it.
So the wedge of health freedom is our online directory of cash-based practices. And so these are doctors, clinicians. We even have 4 pharmacies. We have several dentists who have joined the wedge. All of them are working directly with the patient, and the patient pays them directly in cash. And you can go to jointhewedge.com and see if there is someone in your area or close enough that you want to go to who will help you work directly with you and work for you, not for the insurance company and not for the government.
So these would be people who do not accept insurance then?
They do not accept insurance, but some of them will give you the receipt, which you can, of course, then send to your own insurance company. But this is part of why they can provide care at a far more affordable rate, is because they're not doing all this paperwork. They're not following all these government regulations and insurance protocols. They're just working for you with their own mind and their own critical thinking as physicians and as practitioners.
Jointhewedge.com is that website. Twyla, we're going to get one more issue in before the break, and that is earlier this year, the EPA had proposed some new limits on a type of gas called ethylene oxide used for sterilizing medical equipment. What's the issue going on with this?
So I think this is very interesting and not likely to pop up in what people read. And this is because of this entire attempt to make all the air cleaner. They are essentially saying that the government is saying that facilities have to decrease their ability to sterilize medical devices by 30% to 50%. And so this gas has been used for 160 years. It is the sole option for devices that can't be steam sterilized, much like pacemakers or some of the tubes that enter your body. They have to be sterilized and have done so for 160 years. But now the government is saying, no, you need to decrease it. And what some of the medical device companies are saying is this is going to leave a lot of patients without access to the care that they need.
Tell you what, we're going to pick up with that another comment, folks. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Twyla Braze is with us today from Citizens Council for Health Freedom, cchfreedom.org, and also mentioned jointhewedge.com. We'll be opening phone lines in just a little while as well, so stay with us. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
For thousands of years, mankind has been fascinated with the question of what will happen in the future. Many have turned to palm readers, horoscopes, or a myriad of psychics for answers. However, one of the places people have refused to look is at the pages of Scripture. Jesus himself was asked by his disciples, "Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world?" Jesus responded in the Olivet Discourse, recorded in Matthew chapters 24 and 25. Bible prophecy teacher and pastor Richard Schmidt addresses and explains these powerful prophetic chapters in his book, Tribulation to Triumph, the Olivet Discourse.
VCY America is making available this book for a donation of $15 or more. For your copy of Tribulation to Triumph, call 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America, and friends, so much unfolding on the program today. This Making Care primary model designed for Medicare recipients. Certainly, we talked about the matter of reproductive health care, encompassing the states being in crosshairs that are taking stands against abortion or body mutilating surgery type things. The impact of affirmative action on issues pertaining to health care, the whole aspect of insurance premiums rising, but benefits are decreasing. Right now, we're talking about the matter of medical devices and the mandates that are coming from the EPA, the Biden EPA, on not allowing for the sterilization toilet. I'd like you to repeat. You said, was it 30 to 50% less they're supposed to be doing?
Yes. Well, what would happen given the regulation is that there would be a decrease in sterilization capacity. In other words, the capacity to sterilize medical devices, a decrease of 30 to 50%. Imagine you are waiting for a device, pacemaker, whatever it is, right? And they can't sterilize it fast enough because the capacity has been limited.
So again, the impact is staggering on this, and really is going to negatively impact standard of care.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you, EPA. I mean, 160 years of using this gas for sterilization. Twyla, one other aspect here before we get to phone calls, and that is, I understand that some emails from Dr. Fauci have been revealed of recent. What is being learned?
So this is an email from February 1st, 2020, and people have been asking for his emails, and it's always been highly redacted. But one of the one of our congressional committees asked for this email or a bunch of his email, and they got unredacted. And so this is an interesting email because it is Tony Fauci, Dr. Tony Fauci, telling several different people, including the head of NIH and people at HHS, the following about a phone call that he had the night before. And he said that these individuals that he talked to the night before were concerned, and I'm now quoting, were concerned about the fact that upon viewing the sequences of several isolates of the COVID virus, there were mutations in the virus that would be most unusual to have evolved naturally in the bats, and that there was a suspicion that this mutation was intentionally inserted. He goes on to say, the suspicion was heightened by the fact that scientists in Wuhan University are known to have been working on gain-of-function experiments to determine the molecular mechanisms associated with bat viruses adapting to human infection, and the outbreak originated in Wuhan. End quote.
Twyla, this is totally opposite the testimony that he gave time and time again. Senator Rand Paul grilled him constantly on gain of function. He denied it consistently.
Yes, one could hope that he could be brought up on perjury, because that's what can happen when you lie to a committee in Congress. Because, yes, this is completely opposite. He knew February 1st, well, actually before February 1st, right? Because he's talking about the night before, so the last day of January.
Mm-hmm.
He'd had this conversation, and everybody was concerned.
Friends, our phone line's here to Crosstalk today, 800-733-9829. I know we put a lot of things on the table here. Some of you that are Medicaid recipients have questions on this Making Care primary model. Other issues pertaining now to the Fauci emails, the HIPAA rules, lots of things on the table. Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829, 1-800-733-9829. 9829. And Twyla, before we get to our first calls, you know, sometimes we hear these things and we're overwhelmed and thinking nothing can ever be done. But I understand there was just a victory in Montana pertaining to genetic information privacy.
Yes, we helped a state senator in Montana take the bill, which was being pushed by 23andMe and Ancestry.com, which we called a DNA grab bill. They called it a genetic privacy bill, and we said it doesn't do anything of the sort. And so we helped a state senator in Montana turn the 23andMe bill into a real genetic privacy bill. And so it is precedent setting. They actually have to get consent before any of the information can be shared, or any of their DNA or any of their sputum or blood or whatever it is, before any of that can be shared with a third party for any reason beyond what they gave it to 23andMe for.
Well, Twyla, I know there's been a program coming out, too, from the National Institutes of Health that is All of Us. It's called All of Us, and getting people to voluntarily, you know, give their consent for their DNA to be given to be, you know, the big guys in all of this, is so, you know, we can find those vaccines and do helpful medical research to know what's going to best be a help to people when disease and other things break out. And there are many people just voluntarily giving over access to their DNA.
Well, it's very interesting that people think so little of considering what the future ramifications could be, or they're just short-sighted, or they're just so excited about the prospect of helping people that they don't look into the fine print. And if you look into the fine print of these organizations, and maybe as well into the government one, you can see that maybe it's going to be given away or going places or being used to do things that you might object to.
Friends, let's go to the phone lines. They're packed. As soon as you hear somebody hang up, that's your opportunity to call. Deborah's calling from Georgia. Deborah, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I have been a Medicare agent for 10 years, and we do have some good benefits. I have never had a client or one of my members that has been denied health care, which is amazing in this country, in this world today. I understand that. I also know that Medicare mandates that no one be allowed to be called unless they have called. Thus, why so many 800 numbers on the television, the advertisement's ridiculous because it gives them an 800 number. They don't know what they're doing. They sign up, and then they have nobody to contact after that. And it's really, really sad for people that really do care about our members. And, you know, it's not all garbage. My people are taken care of, and or I would not be doing what I do. But I do have a son that has an insurance company that does deny almost every claim. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to get that out there. You have to be very careful who you deal with. I prefer one-on-one, person-to-person agent that you know lives in your area and works in your area and works for you. And that's what I want you to do.
Great. Deborah, are you familiar with the Making Care model that was just announced?
I have actually gotten letters and our calls about that, and they are doing cold calls on that, telling me that I could get this, I could get that, and I could get the other. And I politely tell them, no, I cannot get it, and you are spreading false advertising. And I just this morning got a letter at my home in my mailbox that stated you are missing benefits, and it's all a scam.
Well, this is coming
information.
Okay, thank you. Twyla, this is coming directly from Medicare, correct? Making Care Primary?
You mean Making
It's from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Yes.
It's not CMS is not doing the calling, and CMS did not send the letters that I'm talking about.
Okay, the ones you're talking about. But CMS, and I'm looking right at their website right now, and it says June 8th, 2023, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services announced a new voluntary primary care model, the Making Care Primary model, that will be tested in 8 states, and it's launching July 1, 2024.
So let me just clarify here that patients or Americans, seniors, whatever you want to call the individuals, will not be contacted about this program. They will not have a choice about this program. This is an attempt by the federal government to corral the physicians who take care of patients, essentially causing the physician to have a conflict of interest with their patients. There will be no question or choice at all for Medicare patients. This is all about getting the doctors to come in to this program where the government has more control over what happens in the exam room.
Great. So, Deborah, for sake of those, we've got many people on hold right now. We're going to be providing a point of contact for Citizens Council for Health Freedom. And if you get further questions or comments on this, we'll be able to do through them. Thank you for the call. Jose is next. Milwaukee, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hi. I know you spoke about the EPA doing a change with that ethylene oxide.
Yeah.
But from my research, I'd like to know what you think. My research, I read up online on their website that back in 2016, that ethylene oxide is a known carcinogenic, for humans. But the funny thing is that during COVID, that ethylene oxide was an ingredient in all those COVID swabs that they were jabbing up people's noses, you know. So I'd just like to see what you think about that.
Thank you, Jose.
Thank you.
So I guess what I would say is I don't know anything about it being part of the swabs, and I haven't looked at it, and you may be correct and you may not be. I have no idea. But what I can say about it is there are lots of things that are called carcinogens, and it might just depend on, you know, how much and how it, you know, you get it. Is it about contact with the skin or is it breathing? Whatever it is, there's a lot of things that have been called carcinogenic, but nobody ever has that kind of contact with it. What we do know is 160 years that it has been used, and what we also know is that lots of people are saved by medical devices. And potentially, if this rule goes through, this is a proposed rule, it's not a final rule, but if the proposed rule goes through, potentially all sorts of people whose lives could be saved by medical devices will have to wait too long and then lose their life or lose, you know, the function of a body part or whatever, right? So, you know, there are always risks and there are always benefits, but the idea that the government would come in and make it much more difficult for anyone to get medical devices is problematic.
Kimberly is next in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. You're on the air.
Hi. First of all, Charlotte, thank you so much for all your work. I really appreciate all you do. Two things. One is, what about the medical code of ethics or the Hippocratic Oath that they have to take? This is in direct contrary to it. And aren't they supposed to have that in order to maintain their medical license? And then two would be, I was working at the University of Wisconsin Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin, back when HIPAA came out. And before that, we already had privacy stuff. That was privacy, and then HIPAA changed the privacy.
Hmm.
Can you address those two things?
Thank you. Twyla, 20 seconds before the break. Go ahead.
Hippocratic Oath is something that they do take, but it's not a legal document, and it has changed over time to become nothing like it used to be. And so they don't have to do that at all to maintain their license. And HIPAA, yes. There was privacy before HIPAA. There was real privacy, legal privacy before HIPAA, and HIPAA did change that to having no privacy.
Thank you for the call. Up against a break, we'll be away for 60 seconds. We'll come back with more of your phone calls. So callers on the hold here, continue to stay there. We'll be with you here momentarily. This is Crosstalk from VCY America. Twyla Braze is with us today. Her website, cchfreedom.org. We'll be right back.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Since February of 2018, I've been warning about the return of the draft. Barack Obama, on his way out the door as president, set up a commission to study drafting America's daughters and mandatory community service. Now, the media mouthpieces seem to be hinting of a coming military draft. ABC News, just this spring, had a headline: is it time to start talking about bringing back the military draft in the United States? And retired Admiral Mike Mullen, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said it's time for families to talk about the draft around the dinner table. Now Biden is calling up reserves. People who thought they were out of the military are being called back in. It's time American families decide now if you're going to send your treasure, your children and grandchildren, to die in foreign wars with no national interest.
Turn to Crosstalk on VCY America. Holding the longest has been Maureen in Janesville. You're on the air. Hello, Maureen.
Hello. Yes, hi. If somebody is on, currently on Medicare, Medicaid, the whole dependent nine yards, and they want to try to find like a primary care physician that is in the wedge, that group, is there going to be too much of a conflict that, you know, you want to pay cash for your primary care or whoever you can find because you're kind of trapped in the system, but you want to use it outside of it as much as you can? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Twyla?
That people have made their own choices and chosen to pay cash for certain care and try to have Medicare pay for other care, and sometimes the wedge practices, the wedge doctors cannot come into the hospital. Actually, most doctors can't come into the hospital unless they're a specialist these days because of something that the Affordable Care Act really encouraged, which was to move away from people coming into, doctors coming into the hospitals to care for their own patients. So it's just a choice you have to make. The very first doctor that ever joined the wedge, she had 400 patients already by the time that she joined, and half of them, 200 of them, were Medicare. So they looked at her as being their reliable doctor who was in their corner, who could come to their home if needed, who could be there to give them advice at different times of the day, and who might even come into the hospital and help them to know whether or not what the doctor who was taking care of them was doing the right thing.
Thank you for the call. Dr. Robert is next in Waupun. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm a retired family practice physician, mm-hmm. and I just would like to say that you can't really address a physician as an individual because physicians now are groups, and that is mostly because they're under contract and deal with an insurance company as a group. And also, the hospital standards address the physicians as a group. So physicians have very little individual input mm-hmm. or standards of practice unless they join the wedge or become one of the wedge. But then there are many other difficulties because of trying to sort of buck the system. And the present training really encourages the new physicians to think of working under supervision and under contract. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to express that.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Robert. Twyla.
Thank you. Well, I agree wholeheartedly. That's the whole plan here, is to keep the doctors not only under the thumb of government or the health plans or the hospital system, which is now hiring them, but also under the peer pressure of their own group. So if a doctor decides to spend too much time with a patient, according to the rest of the group, if the doctor decides to do something outside of the typical protocols, the group scores might look worse because they aren't complying with, you know, whatever the protocol is that has been set. So, but this is all against the patient, and this is not where it should be, but this is socialized medicine corporate style. That's what we have today, and what we're looking for is to use the wedge of health freedom to build a parallel system, much like the homeschoolers did, and eventually we want to have even hospitals in our parallel system that you pay cash to, because all the prices of today do not have to be the prices of tomorrow. And if you get real insurance that pays you, the patient, just like your home insurance or your car insurance, right, then you can go pick your hospital, you can go pick your doctor, and the groups will break up because the doctors don't actually want to be in groups. Mm.
you know, there's a lot of them who are leaving medicine way too early because they're tired of all the bureaucracy. They're tired of all the outside control. And we really need to get the patient and the doctor back together again for the benefit of the patient.
Thank you, Dr. Robert. But we've got Don next in Rogers, Minnesota. You're on the air.
Yes, Twyla. I am 72 years old and have been a quadriplegic for 52 years old. What is the handwriting on the wall for people like me if we have to go to the hospital?
Well, what I would say is it probably depends on the hospital and the degree that the hospital is simply following protocols, and as well the doctor, to the degree the doctor is following protocols and not willing to go outside. So I think what we found in COVID was how many doctors are just following the protocols. So there was early treatment, and every doctor typically tried to figure out a way to help a person in the midst of a virus, but they didn't this time. They just followed the protocols, too many of them, you know, great deals of them. And so what we can hope for in your situation is you would find doctors and a hospital that are actually in your corner and are not such protocol followers that dictate what can and cannot be done for someone who is on Medicare, who is, you know, in a wheelchair and has been for that long of time. I understand that you're probably feeling vulnerable, but I think lots of people in hospitals today should feel vulnerable because of the high standard of, not the high standard of care, but the high amount of protocol following that is happening in the hospital.
Don, thanks for calling. We're going to try and squeeze Randy in Tomo, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello, Jim and Twyla. I just want to make a couple of comments. First of all, concerning Dr. Fauci, he did a study, I think it was back in 2019, and this was done with people who had Ebola in Africa, I believe. And he used a drug that a lot of people have heard about, remdesivir, and it was through a company called Gilead. And Dr. Brian Artis found out that Fauci did this study, and he knew that 54% of these people, and in fact, it was the deadliest drug of all of them that were used, had killed 54% of the people.
I tell you what, we're down to just a quarter minute, Randy. I know you have more to say. Twyla, quick comment, if you would.
It's true that they long knew that remdesivir was a deadly medication. The other thing that they knew was it was for stopping viral replication, which is really only lasts for the first 7 days of the virus. So what on earth were they doing using it after that? But that's where the money was coming from.
We have run out of the time. CCHfreedom.org is the website. Jointhewedge.com. The phone number as well for CCH Freedom, Citizens Council for Health Freedom, 651-646-8935. Twyla, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Friends, you'll find helpful information on their website. Again, that's cchfreedom.org. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.